coax cable, which doesn't really have a great deal of inductive impedance and wouldn't really work terribly well as an RF choke. So you would have to kind of either insert a ferrite or a loop of ferrite for it to have enough of inductance of the outer shielding to produce RF choking.
But you were talking about a clamp on ferrite, right?
Yeah, because those are usually easier. But if you just have a toroid, you could use it the same way. Just have to be cautious with the clamp that it completely closes. If some kind of grit or grime obstructs the connection and if there's a gap between it, it's not quite as effective as it would be if you were able to snap it closed completely.
Okay. And I want a prediction from you. It's an impossible prediction. And why I'm doing this, the only answer is because I can. I have a small... Right now, I've gotten this mag loop to work from 20 to 40 meters. And I have a fairly big, bigger than recommended, coupling loop. But it's working. I have a much smaller coupling loop that I would like to use as the coupling loop, but put inside the bigger coupling loop. So in other words, I'd have two quote-unquote radiating elements, not one. I'd have three loops actually in total. And can you predict what would happen to my... By being able to find good impedances on different bands, if I have three loops going?
Well, I mean, almost anything is possible, but I would assume that it would kind of be such a complex-driven pair of elements that it wouldn't give you any additional value and would probably... lessen the value that you already have of it. So although it's within the realm of possibilities that it will improve it, I think that fundamentally something like that would not improve it. I'm just basing it on seeing a lot of magnetic loops, and as far as I can recall, I have not seen anywhere where there were multiple driven elements. Which is what you're doing. You're driving your magnetic loop with a smaller inductive coupled loop. And having two feeding both of them, so you have two different impedances, and they're probably going to beat against each other and disrupt any kind of resonance. My guess would be it would be less effective than what you presently have. But, you know, who knows? If you don't try, you'll never know.
I just thought it would be a fun little experiment. It would take me all of 10 minutes to attach the smaller coupling loop and see what's resonant on what band. So I'll do that, and I'll report back next week, Roy. W2BZ.
Okay, very good. I mean, even if one of them was a passive element, you would probably undermine some amount of inductive coupling from the initial driving element to the magnetic loop. But come back next week, tell us what it is. It sounds like an interesting experiment. Who knows? You may have discovered something completely new and novel, because I can't remember ever seeing a illustration of a magnetic loop with two simultaneous driven elements.
We'll give it a shot. What bothers me is that it took a bigger... They say the ratio is usually... The coupling loop should be one-fifth the size of the outer loop, and to get this to work on 20 through 40, I had to, my coupling loop is about a third the size of the outer loop, so it's much bigger, and it's working, you know, so don't pull defeat out of the jaws of victory. But the smaller loop is one-fifth of the size of the outer loop. So I just thought I'd throw it up there, see what happens without taking down the present coupling loop. And who knows? It could be surprising. I haven't seen it either, but who knows? Maybe I've invented something.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it's sort of vaguely reminiscent of if you had a Yagi, which never has more than one driven element, build a Yagi that has two driven elements. Never seen that. But, you know, again, doesn't mean you shouldn't try. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Limar Technical Net. If anyone has any other questions or comments or topics for discussion before we move on to the next segment, hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
I could tell you a story.
Okay.
This woman walks into a funeral home and looking for her husband, obviously, before the funeral. And she goes to the funeral home manager. She goes, "I'd like to see Marvin." And she goes and walks into a room with a couple of other people who are being prepared. And she says, "Well, okay, well, that's Marvin, but why is he wearing a blue suit? Marvin never wears a blue suit. He always wears a black suit, just like that gentleman over there." And the funeral manager comes in and says, "Listen, I'm really sorry. You know, we made a mistake." He goes, "Give me 5 minutes and we'll take care of it." And she goes, "What are you talking about, 5 minutes? How could you possibly do that in 5 minutes?" She goes, "Just trust me. Just trust me." So she goes outside and she's sitting down and waiting. And then 5 minutes later, he miraculously shows up. He goes, "All done." And she goes, "But I have to look at Marvin." And she goes, "Okay, go look at him." And he's in a black suit. And she goes, "That's amazing." She goes, "How did you do that? Really? I mean, that's amazing. How?" And she goes, "I just switched the heads."
Okay. Well, it appears that the audience is silent. Thanks, Brian. Interesting joke. I've never been a big fan of jokes. I mean, George Carlin is my favorite comedian, but most comedians, unfortunately, don't make me laugh too much. I like kind of funny stories. I really used to love listening to Gene Shepard, who I wouldn't call a comedian. He was a storyteller, and he told very interesting stories. He had a great story of when he went and passed his FCC license exams to be an amateur radio operator. And I don't think it was a completely truthful one, because he usually changed things around to make it more entertaining. But I used to love listening to him on WOR. Once again, this continues to be AC2GS. We have a few more minutes. If anyone has any closing comments or opening comments or sideways comments or questions or topics for very short discussion, hit that push to talk.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, just an observation about AM and FM radio. You know, if you listen to CBS radio, you know, 1010, Winds, 1010 Winds radio, and then you click over to the FM portion, you know, I think it's 92.3 or 93.2, but anyway, if you switch back and forth, there's like a 5-second delay. The AM comes across. And then if you click over, it's around 5 seconds, and then you hear the same thing repeated. So I just think it's a strange effect, you know, whatever goes on in the in the circuitry to have it where there's a 5-second delay. Anyway, back to you, Ron.
Yeah, back in the very old days, I'm not quite sure if it was WMCA or WOR when they started to take phone calls. I think Barry Gray started to take phone calls first. And they quickly discovered that they might have a problem if they just kept it live. So they asked an engineer about a delay system. So, you know, he's a smart engineer. He took a reel-to-reel tape recorder and put an extra head on the end of the reel, and basically, you know, it recorded off the main head, and then it played back about 5 or 10 seconds later at the edge of the reel-to-reel device. And since then, they've had delays for people who take phone calls and such. I don't know if that's the case here. It could very well be latency problems because of different things that they use equipment that they use for other purposes that tend to inject latency delays. So it'll be interesting to find out. Unfortunately, I don't know any broadcast engineers anymore. I used to know a few, but they've retired from the field.
Yeah, Eric used to do that. And, but he's gone. Anyway, I just thought that's strange. I was playing around with that the other day. Because out here, you know, I'm out in Rockaqua, so I'm in a real fringe area. So when I listen to 1010, you know, it's okay. But then as you drive around, you know, any of the electronics, you know, as you drive through the area, all of a sudden you start to lose the station here and there. But if I click on to the FM, no problem. You know, the capture effect takes hold, and I never lose the station. Anyway, back to you, Ron.
Okay, very good, Paul. Well, it's 10:15 plus, so it's a perfect time to have Paul WS2N join us and give us the SpaceNet report. So take it away, Paul.
Oh, okay, yeah, quarter after already. Very good. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And an interesting landing I talked about it last week was the New Glenn. First time they were able to launch and land that first stage out in the middle of the ocean, around 400 miles out far. And you know, I don't want to go through the whole thing again, but that turns out to be a big plus for Blue Origin and the space program in general, especially with all the problems that SpaceX has been having lately. You know, one of the main goals for Blue Origin is going to be to have a cargo craft land on the moon and eventually a crewed craft with people. And, you know, I mean, they have other big plans. They have their, what they used to call the Kuiper broadband satellites that they'll be launching, over 3,000 of them. But now they call them the LEO satellites. They've done away with the Kuiper name for some reason. So that's going to be their main goal, big income for Blue Origin, similar to what SpaceX is doing. SpaceX now has like what three million customers or so, and so far Blue Origin has none. But they've got, you know, a couple hundred satellites up there, and someday they'll have a heck of a lot more. But the next big mission now for New Glenn that I'm looking for will probably take place, I'm going to say around January or maybe February. They're pushing for January. Would be the MK-1 Blue Moon Lander cargo version. You know, and they plan on landing on the south pole of the moon. They plan on using the planned rocket, one that actually landed on that drone ship. Plan is to, you know, if those engines are all in good shape, they plan on using the same vehicle to launch the MK-1 to the moon. MK-1 is larger than the LEM that landed on the moon, six times, you know, for Apollo. And this will be the crew version there. I mean, the cargo version. The crew version is going to be much bigger. That Apollo used. So, looking forward to see how this thing operates. It's liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen vehicle. And they've got these big radiators that are going to open up in space to get rid of heat. The idea is to keep that fuel as cold as possible so that it doesn't boil off. You know, liquid hydrogen, it's a tough thing to store. But if it all works out, you know, they'll be able to say that they completed another mission as early as, you know, maybe late January. I'm gonna guess probably February, you know, the way things go. But they plan on using that same rocket, the first, you know, the first stage. Second stage, of course, would be new. It's only the first stage that's reusable. But that thing is 19 stories tall and 20, I think almost 23 feet wide, you know, in diameter. So roughly four times the volume and size of a Falcon 9 rocket. So looking forward to seeing what happens with MK-1, they call it. Any comments, WS2S?
Well, it's Brian, KF2CZ. Certainly interesting. Are you saying they're going to go ahead and launch it with that, and they're going to send it to the moon to deploy it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they're getting ready for it. There's a special engine that they use. They call it the BE-7 engine. They've been testing that, you know, for the last, I don't know how many years. And it's a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engine. They say that's ready. The crew version, that's supposed to have three or four of those engines. You know, that's the next big mission. They do have another mission. I don't know which one is going to occur first. This one, they plan on launching a satellite to orbit around the moon. Firefly is building a satellite. They plan on launching something for them. But it, you know, either way. We'll see. I'm trying to think of some of the other statistics that went along with this thing. I know there's a bunch of NASA cameras on board that NASA wants to test for them to see what the dirt on the moon looks like.
Interesting, but here's the question. They're going to launch it with the crew module, and they're going to land the crew module on the moon and then bring it up again? Am I incorrect?
Cargo version. then they'll eventually get around to different the group version. The if you have it, astronauts flying there. So, yeah. And when they get to the crew version, you're going to be, it looks like two big pieces. Similar to the LEM. When the LEM landed, they had the descent module, and then that descent module would stay on the moon. The ascent module would separate from the descent module, and you know, they would use the descent module as like, you know, like a launch pad for the ascent module, similar to what they're going to do with the crew version. That will land, and it'll have a descent module, and then they'll have an upper stage, which will bring them back up to the back up to orbit. That's the way I'm reading it now. You know, there's another version of this thing, too, that I've heard of, too. But that's the present plan. We'll get to that in a couple of years. Something else I was going to say about it. I forgot. Anyway, back to you, Brian.
Very interesting. I look forward to seeing that. Thank you.
Yeah. Someday I'll get my QSL card from the moon. You know, if you get a base established there, you know, sooner or later you're going to have a couple of hams on board. And you know, the ARRL will eventually be involved in something like that. So yeah, they'll launch it on the new Glenn rocket, which like I said last a week or so ago, it was very successful. And that would be the crew version. In the future, I'm not sure when, and you know, a lot of things are kind of a little shaky with the amount of information that comes out of Blue Origin. There could be a possibility that the lunar version will launch on the new upgraded version of the New Glenn rocket. New Glenn rocket that went up last week was seven big engines for the first stage, and then two engines for the second stage. Those seven engines, they call them the BE-4 engines, and the second stage are BE-3U engines. The first stage has LNG, liquid natural gas, for fuel, and the upper stage is using hydrogen. There's an upgraded version of this whole New Glenn rocket. It will actually be longer. Right now, if you put the rocket that went up, you put that next to a Saturn V rocket that took us to the moon, the New Glenn is slightly shorter than the Saturn V. The newer version that they're working on will eventually be longer than the Saturn V rocket. And it will also have nine big engines instead of seven engines. So that's a lot more thrust. Each one puts out 550,000 pounds of thrust. So you know, you're adding over a million pounds of thrust by doing this, which, of course, you know, you're able to increase the payloads, you know, to either low Earth orbit or all the way to the moon or Mars. The second stage, the one I said that has the liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, they have the, they're called the BE-3U engines, you know, BE-3 engines are the same ones that they use on New Shepard rockets. New Shepard is the one that just does the suborbital flights. They bring up passengers, 4 minutes of weightlessness, and they come back right down, and, you know, they have 15, 16-minute ride. But those very successful engines, they've launched them over 30 different times. They can relight them. Right now, that they're using the same engines on the rocket that just went up, two of them. But the new improved version of New Glenn is going to have four of those engines. So it's a big, a bit of a monster, this whole setup. But yeah, that's coming down the road. But you know, I'm not sure when, that's for sure. But that's on, you know, that's not being considered. That's definitely a plan by Blue Origin. Any other comments?
Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens with the progress on that. Anything else?
Yeah, and they're going to call it, the new one is going to be the nine by four, because it's got nine engines for the first stage and four. You know, I'll be hearing that, I guess, in the future. Right now, they call the one that launched the 7x2. It's got seven engines and two on the second stage. But anyway, that's big 19-story first stage. They eventually floated that all the way back to Florida, and they've already unloaded it. Took, I think, 3 days to get back. And successfully put on, not only on land, they tilt the whole thing over from vertical to horizontal, and they put it on this, you know, this gigantic trailer, and they've already brought it into what I consider a hangar, and back into the building, and presently they're checking out the engines. It looked really clean. I mean, if you look at a Falcon 9 rocket when it comes back, it looks like all soot and everything all over, and you know, permanently it stays there. You know, they clean it up the best they can, but you could tell all the times that Falcon 9 has gone up, a very dirty looking exterior on second, third, and fourth flights. This thing came back, you know, crystal clear. I mean, you know, it looked perfect. If you look at the close-up pictures. And the reason for that is they're running the LNG, liquid natural gas, where Falcon 9 has kerosene, and, you know, RP-1 is liquid kerosene that's cooled down. You know, they bring it to a low temperature, but it's still kerosene. So when you burn that through the engines, you wind up with soot and everything, and that increases the amount of time it takes to clean it up for reuse. Where it looks like New Glenn is not going to have that problem. All right, let me just drop and I'll move on. WS2N.
I'm here. Station ID pass 2CC.
Okay, very good. Anyway, I mentioned Starship. Sunday. So Friday, they were testing the new version of the Starship. They call it version 3 out at the test facility down in Boca Chica, Texas. So they had it on a stand, and they were pumping it up with nitrogen. They want to, you know, to test the tanks, test the ability for the rocket to hold pressure. And sure enough, the whole thing, you know, blew. So this was going to be their next one that they were going to try to send into space. Would have been number 12. They've been at this for quite a while. And quite a few of them have blown up spectacularly, you know, over the Turks and Caicos Islands. You know, debris all over the place. And they try again, the same thing happened. They've had them blow up on the test stand. The last five that they flew, only two were somewhat successful. And that was the version two of the Starship. Now they're into version three. And this one that just blew was the first of the version three Starships. So now they've got a big problem. They don't have another one ready. So it looks like it's going to take a couple of months before they can ever have another test flight. And even at that, number 12 was not even scheduled to orbit. They haven't made it into orbit yet after all these flights. You know, this is supposed to be a reusable rocket, you know, completely reusable, second stage and the first stage, which is really the Starship itself. So they have, I mean, I think they're going to get there, but not as soon as they were hoping. They keep testing and all kinds of problems happen. They blow up and then they retest again. You know, they fix this, fix that. I think it's a strange way of doing it, but, you know, I mean, it's working out. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to get there, I guess. Each time they get further and further down the line. So their goal, of course, is to get the Starship into orbit and then be able to deorbit that Starship and have it come back down and land vertically and then have that reusable. They want to reuse the whole thing, liquid methane on both stages. So again, they will not have that problem with the Falcon 9s with all the soot and everything, with kerosene. It's very similar to what New Glenn is using. New Glenn uses LNG, liquid natural gas, which is very close to methane, and then Starship is using the methane. So if you watch the news, they incorrectly say that New Glenn is using methane. There's a slight difference, but very, very close to the same thing, you know. But, you know, you got to, there's less involved with liquid natural gas. With the methane, they have to go through an extra step to purify the liquid natural gas into methane. Anyway, we'll see. Now the new Glenn version, if they ever get that off the ground, has a bigger fairing, a bigger, wider fairing. They call it an 8.5 meter fairing. Compared to the 7-meter fairing that they're using now. So it's a bigger diameter, that means more volume for the rocket. Because more thrust, they'll be able to carry heavier loads. So, you know, it's going to be a changed world with these two rockets once they get going, either Starship or New Glenn. There's a couple of other ones that are going to come online too that they plan on being reusable as well. They plan on first
first launching their first rocket next year, sometime next year. And one of the companies is Relativity. And again, it's a good-sized rocket. Comes into the medium to heavy lift category. And that would be a liquid methane rocket as well. So they plan on having that one as reusable. Well, the first stage, the second stage, they wanted to do that originally, but Relativity is now going to let that go for a while. That will be expendable. But the other company that they plan on launching next year is also Stoke. Stoke has a good idea that will be a medium lift rocket. The first stage and the second stage will be reusable. The second stage will come back down through the atmosphere, and it has the it looks like they have 30 engines, but it's really only a couple of engines that are going to be igniting. They just have a bunch of different combustion chambers surrounding the whole diameter of this thing. And it will be running on liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So it comes down through the atmosphere. Yeah, it has a heat shield. But the heat shield is going to be cool because liquid hydrogen inside the rocket is very cold. They're going to have, pipes on the inside running along the heat shield to chill down the heat shield as it's coming through the atmosphere. And this way, they won't have the problem of, a heat shield disintegrating. Most heat shields, when they come through the atmosphere, it's an ablative system where molecules and everything just blow off from it as it's coming through, and they would have to replace them after they land. This thing, because of the active cooling effect of the liquid hydrogen cooling the heat shield, you might not have to do that. Anyway, that company is called Stoke, and they're building something called, I think, the Nova rocket is what they're going to call it. So, they have a launch complex and everything down in Florida that the government has turned over to them, similar to what they did for Blue Origin. They took over Launch Complex 36, similar to what they did for Starship. Starship's got two launch complexes down in Florida, LC-40 and Launch Complex 39A. Relativity has rebuilt the launch complex, so they expect to be ready sometime this year. Now, another company that wants to go